Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Dark Knights.
Good evening, listener. You're listening to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. On tonight's edition, we invite you to leave behind your safe reality and descend with us into the frightening depths of the most terrifying imaginations with two audio adaptations of frightening fiction about devastating dinners and vexing visitors. I'm your host, Steve Taylor, and tonight I'll be your guide as we traverse the dimly lit corridors of your darkest dreams. Welcome to the 2023 Thanksgiving-themed episode. Joining us tonight to help bring to life the frightening fiction of Haley Henson and Kyle Harrison are voice talents Olivia Steele, Kevin Barbieri, Rissa Montanez, Michelle Kane, Nick Goroff, Danielle Hewitt, and Eric Peabody. Now, get your ticket ready. Take your seat in our Theater of the Minds and brace yourself. It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Our first tale this evening is written by Haley Henson and is performed by Olivia Steele, Kevin Barbieri, Rissa Montanez, and Michelle Kane. In it, we meet a large family gathering together for the holidays. Not so exciting, right? Well, the fun begins when people realize one of these family members just doesn't belong. Now, without further ado, I present to you Feast of Deception.
I was completely in love with my husband before I killed him. Well, mostly. Now, I'm sure you're wondering where this is going. We're only a few sentences in and the crap has already hit the fan. Just give me a second to explain. You'll understand soon enough. And I'm willing to bet you'll side with me. I loved that man more than life itself, but he was completely and utterly deranged. And now that I think about it, I don't regret it. One single bit. Does that make me a murderer? Yes. Do I feel any type of remorse for my actions? Absolutely not. But am I justified in my actions? Well, I'll recount what happened, and you can tell me. Marshall was always a bit strange. Before we ever met up, he told me that he wanted to be upfront and honest with me about a few of his red flags. To say I was a bit hesitant at first was an understatement, but I wanted to keep my options open. So I typed back some cookie-cutter response about not judging him for his downfalls and being appreciative that he was willing to be so open. The first two red flags were strange, yes, but not deal breakers. Things like absolutely insisting on disposing of his food leftovers out in the woods behind his backyard. But maybe he just liked to compost? Another particularly weird one was that he always kept a pair of rubber gloves stuffed in his wallet. Most guys kept some kind of rubber in their wallets, though, gloves or otherwise, so who was I to judge? But that's not what this is about anyways. And besides, now that I think about it, those flags weren't anything in comparison to what I'm about to explain later on. They were definitely foreshadowing, but stay with me here. I'll get to that in a second. A few minutes dragged by before I heard my phone ding with the final red flag that Marshall said he was the most nervous about.
I have strange eating habits.
I remember looking at those words, head cocked to the side, eyebrows scrunched together in confusion as I thought about what he meant. Did he have weird food allergies? Did he only eat at certain times of the day? Was he one of those bodybuilders that just ate bland chicken, tasteless rice, and wilted broccoli? Or worse yet, was he a vegan? Please don't cancel me in the comments. If you've never tried dating or cooking for a gym rat or a vegan, that in of itself is a horror story all on its own. But I digress. Are you a bodybuilder or a vegan? The anticipation I felt as I watched the typing bubbles appear was like that of a roller coaster car climbing the tracks to the very tip top of the ride. And then he replied,
"No."
Great, I'm sure we'll get along like peaches and cream then. Looking back now, I suppose I should have delved a little deeper into what he meant exactly, but I'm going to be completely honest. Marshall was hot. Like, hot. Hot. And I was so single that if I screamed into the void, "I love you," I'm almost positive that the echo would reply back, "I just want to be friends." So please don't judge a girl for acting a little on impulse. At the time, I was wholeheartedly convinced that this man was God's gift to women. He was tall, well over 6 feet, had a thick head of hair and eyes so blue that they put the sky to shame. I really thought this man was my other half. Despite being a little off from time to time, everything else seemed to be in perfect working condition. In fact, even our humor was similar. There weren't many men that could take a playful ego beating, crippling sarcasm, and dark jokes. But he was more than equipped to dish it right back and keep me on my toes. That was one of the things I loved about him the most. Despite all those pros, though, there was one very big con. I thought he was normal. Looking back, I couldn't have been more wrong. I'll never forget the very first time we met. It was a Tuesday night and the downpour was dreadful. The heavens opened up and buckets of rain fell down in sheets. I had a little black dress on with thin spaghetti straps and a low-cut neck. I'd shaved every inch of my body baby butt smooth, did makeup that took at least an hour, and curled my hair until it was perfectly bouncy, specifically with our date in mind. But by the time I made it into the restaurant, my hair clung to the sides of my face in thin, wispy strands, and my dress was drenched, stuck to my skin like plaster. It was clear that Marshall was smitten, though. Even in my waterlogged state, he looked at me as if he knew from the moment he laid eyes on me that I would be his. And he was right. 1 year later, he proposed, and a year after that, we were married. Although I hadn't ever met Marshall's parents, for reasons I'll explain later, he did meet mine, and they adored him as if he was their own son. My mom was quick to welcome him, talking to Marshall about the three Fs, as she calls it, faith, family, and friends, while my father picked his brain on one of his favorite topics, mortuary science. Marshall had just graduated from school, fresh-faced and hopeful, more than ready to become a mortician, and Ironically enough, that's exactly what my father did. In fact, it was a family business. My younger brother, also in the field, helped with the bodies that needed to be cremated, and my mother was a grief and loss counselor. So it was no surprise when my father took Marshall under his wing, letting him assist in the preparation of the bodies. Then, without much notice, when my brother moved upstate to live with his girlfriend, Marshall was all too happy to take over, quickly learning the ropes of the crematorium. At this point, I was the only one that wasn't involved in death in any type of way. I grew up with it, which is probably where my morbidly dark sense of humor had taken root. So I was familiar with it, and I respected the profession, but it just wasn't something I aspired to work with when I was a little girl. Sometimes I wish I'd have taken it up, though, because working with the living is much harder than working with the dead. Customer service is not for the faint of heart, and if my clients were cold and blue, they wouldn't have time to argue with me about their insurance claims. But that's morbid. Sorry, let me get back on track. For 10 whole months, mine and Marshall's marriage could only be described as beautifully ignorant bliss. Marshall was a romantic, and I loved every second of it. Emphasis on the word loved. Once again, let me stress that I loved this man dearly. Killing him wasn't easy. In February, for Valentine's Day, he surprised me with a romantic weekend getaway. The bed was covered in roses, there were chocolate-covered strawberries, champagne, the whole dang shebang. For the 4th of July, he personally delivered a flower arrangement to my work. Numerous red and white roses were wrapped in blue cellophane with a small note stuck into the top of it.
The flag may have 50 stars at the skies, many more, but none of them can compare to you. You shine brighter than them all. Happy 4th of July, my love. Marshall.
I tell you what, Holly, that husband of yours is one fine son of a gun. I only wish I could be half as lucky as you are.
Jenny was a middle-aged divorcee with a Karen haircut and a monstrously large rear end that screamed, "Wide load ahead." Not too long after she started working with me, whispers about her husband cheating on her with a woman about my age crept across the office like a forest fire. She was his secretary, fresh-faced and young, blonde-haired and green-eyed. Ironically enough, the both of us looked somewhat similar, and because of that, I quickly became her target. I had just turned 24 at the beginning of October, and believe me when I say that she was quick to remind me that I was no longer a spring chicken, and that if I wanted to keep my husband interested, I'd better trade in my dress slacks for tight little pencil skirts and my ballet flats for heels. Ginny's bitterness towards her husband's infidelity knew no bounds. Her comments about my age were quickly silenced, though, the day that Marshall delivered those flowers. His love for me was so incredibly evident that even a blind person could see it. The man looked at me as if I'd hung the moon. Another one of the many reasons I loved him. All of the women in the office swooned. Even the oldest of them, Marjorie, turned into a blushing, giggling schoolgirl before burying her nose back into her computer screen. Marshall was always old-fashioned, and he had quite a way with words. Why he chose me out of all the women he could have had, I had no idea. Until the night I murdered him. After we celebrated the 4th of July, the rest of the summer passed us by like a freight train, quickly speeding into August and then October, my birthday month. In perfect Marshall fashion, he didn't hesitate to go all out. That Friday, he cleaned the entire house, brought me lunch with a side of a dozen white roses, and then told me to wear something nice. So that night, I slipped into his favorite red dress, the one that fit me like I was poured into it, and then headed out to his car. The whole entire car ride, we talked and laughed and sang wildly along to the radio like two crazy psychopaths. Ironically, only one of us was an actual psychopath. That night, he took me to dinner at a swanky little place in town to wine and dine me with the most delicious steak I have ever tasted to date. To end the dinner, he ordered a personalized dessert plate, 2 different cheesecakes drizzled with chocolate syrup that spelled out, "Happy Birthday, Holly," and several glasses of very expensive wine. We ended the night with a movie and extracurricular activities, but I seriously couldn't have asked for more. Everything that he did for me was selfless and caring and well thought out, and every fiber of my being loved him for it. And then November rolled around. Thanksgiving was staring me dead in the face, a sinister smirk curling at its cranberry sauce painted lips. That Thanksgiving was Marshall's last.
Yo, it's Jay Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
I remember when his mother called. It was the day after Halloween. Marshall was working on something in his office, and the landline was ringing off the hook. "Sinclair Residence?" I chirped, picking the phone up on the third ring.
"Oh, Holly, this is Susan. Can you put my angel of a son on the line?"
My eyes nearly rolled into the back of my head while I gritted my teeth. She didn't even need to announce who she was. I could tell just by the irritating sound akin to that of nails on a chalkboard, her tone of voice tinny and condescending. This was none other than my mother-in-law. "Susan, Marshall is really busy right now in his office. He's buried up to his nose and..."
"Don't give me that nonsense! I want to speak to my son right now, and you don't get to dictate when! I don't know what you did to his cell phone, but he's not answering. And I need to speak to him about Thanksgiving plans."
I ran my hand down my face and scoffed. This woman was insufferable. "Susan, I'm really not trying to start an argument here. I didn't do anything to his cell phone." With a pause, I took a deep breath and rubbed the bridge of my nose. We have both tried to explain this to her before, but Marshall's mother could call the president during a press meeting and still expect him to answer. On the other hand, if Jesus himself was calling her about the end of the world as we know it, she wouldn't answer for anything. Susan had such an irrational fear of scammers that she blocked every number that she didn't recognize. "You can't reach Marshall on his cell phone because he has it on Do Not Disturb."
"Ugh, just forget it. I'm really not in the mood to hear excuses, Holly. I've got a horrible headache. Mr. Ketzer across the street refuses to get his mail in anything other than his underpants. Shooting me a middle finger every time I tell him he's going to hell for his immodesty, and..."
For the next few minutes, I listened to her incessant whining before she finally stopped and said,
"Well, I guess I've no other choice than to let you in on the Thanksgiving plans. And you can pass the details on to Marshall."
As I mentioned previously, during the entirety of our relationship, I'd never met Marshall's parents. Now, I know how that sounds, but they lived in another state, all the way out in no man's land. We did happen to have a phone call that did not go very well, and long story short, nothing was good enough for their angel. So the two of us just decided to elope. Marshall, being their only son, was their golden child. According to him, his younger sister Vivian was a bit of a handful, breaking their rigid rules right and left, testing their parents' patience, and nearly pushing them to the brink of insanity. His parents never much approved of me, but neither of us cared. Thanksgiving would be my first time officially meeting all of them, and I really wasn't looking forward to it. "Sure, fill me in on what you've got planned, and I'll be sure to pass all this on to Marshall."
"First of all, Thanksgiving is going to be at our house this year. And due to Henry's work schedule, we're going to be celebrating early."
Before you ask, Henry is Marshall's dad. During the phone call that I had with his parents many moons ago, I don't recall him ever saying anything besides brief introductions. His voice icy cold and flat, devoid of any kind of emotion. Saying that man was strange was an understatement.
You and Marshall will sleep in separate bedrooms, and you're allowed to bring either pumpkin or apple pie. But not pecan. Pecan is my specialty.
The longer she spoke, the more my temper flared.
Oh, and I almost forgot. Tell Marshall that I'm making his favorite.
Her voice trailed off, a slight edge to it. A strange feeling crept over me as I clutched the phone. Something about the way she said that gave me goosebumps. And what is his favorite exactly? One singular brow was raised as I chewed on the inside of my cheek nervously.
You're his wife. Wouldn't you know what my lovely little boy likes to eat the most?
Instead of getting angry with Susan, I decided to indulge her instead. Perhaps there is something you cook better than I do.
Oh dear, the list could go on and on. But I'm guessing he hasn't mentioned his, or...
She paused, choosing her wording carefully.
Our strange eating habits, I suppose.
Now I was confused. It had been a while since I had even thought about that first series of messages he and I'd shared. But ever since I'd married him, he'd eaten all of what I'd cooked, and never displayed any sign of disapproval. If anything, he acted as if my cooking was great. There wasn't even a mention of food allergies or special dietary requirements. He referenced his strange eating habits once, but it was never brought back up again. Surely if I was cooking something he disliked or couldn't eat, he would tell me? He may have mentioned something about it. What's so strange about...
You'll see what we mean when you show up to Thanksgiving dinner. And if you don't like what I've cooked up, well, I suppose you can enjoy a peanut butter sandwich for all I care.
Before I could even respond, she hung up the phone. The lady was infuriating, but that was just a preview of what was to come. Our Thanksgiving date with Marshall's family came a lot quicker than we were ready for, but in true Marshall fashion, he assured me that he would try to rein his mother in. Even he was aware that she could be quite the ray of sunshine. The night that I met them will be seared into my mind for many reasons, but the main one is because of what happened during Thanksgiving dinner. For as long as I live, I will never forget it. Marshall and I arrived at their privileged gated monstrosity of a house a little after midnight, so not many pleasantries were exchanged. As stated on the phone, it was demanded that we sleep in separate rooms. The second his mother strolled down the hall in her outdated little nightgown, robe wrapped tightly around her tall, willowy frame, Marshall winked and tugged me into his room. The second he locked the door, both of us slipped out of our clothes and fell into bed. It had been a long drive, and the two of us were way past exhausted.
I promise she's not always this bad,
he whispered into my hair, an arm draped around my waist. The fireplace in the corner of his room was crackling, the warm glow illuminating the contours of Marshall's face. My fingers reached out and traced them as I spoke. If this isn't bad, I'd hate to see her at her worst. Marshall chuckled and snatched up the finger that was tracing the sharpness of his jawline. He pressed a kiss to the pad of it, intertwining his fingers with mine.
She's just a little flustered is all. I'm sure she'll warm up to you eventually.
A small smile tugged at his lips as I turned around in his embrace, pressing my back towards him and snuggling further into his warmth. I sat like that for a moment, still and quiet, before it hit me. Marshall, I forgot to ask you about this, but your mom told me something about making your favorite meal. She brought up your family's strange eating habits. I know you mentioned it back when we were dating, and I'd never questioned it, but now I'm The sound of a snort caught me off guard. Slowly, I leaned up on my elbow and peered over. He was out cold. With a small huff, I snuggled back under the covers and eventually dozed off. Sleep did not come easy for me that night. At the time, I was unsure of why, but I really think it might have been my mind trying to warn me that something just wasn't quite right. Something was clearly off. But I was none the wiser. The following afternoon, Marshall and Vivian were picking up some last-minute things from the store, and his mother was knee-deep in preparing dinner. I sure as heck wasn't about to go down and offer my help, so instead, I opted to stay out of the way. In fact, I really needed to make a call to my own parents. I knew they would be slightly disappointed that I wasn't spending the holiday with them. My mom and I always stayed up late the night before making the pies. It was a tradition.
How's everything going over at your in-laws?
My mother's voice was none other than Southern charm, wrapped in multiple layers of warmth and comfort, and I clung to every word like it was a lifetime. I could feel her smile over the phone. Well, his mother is just sweet as pie. The sarcasm coating my words was unmistakable. The woman was a cold-blooded snake at best.
Oh, honey, is it really that bad?
Her voice softened, a sigh floating over the line.
Surely Marshall will help mediate?
Marshall. I relaxed at the sound of his name. When he was around, everything felt right in the world. Everything felt safe. He's promised that he won't let her get out of hand, and I trust that he'll keep his word. So I'm hoping things run smoothly tonight.
Well, I'll certainly keep the two of you in my thoughts and prayers. Don't hesitate to reach out if you need anything, okay?
With a nod, more to myself than her, I blew out a breath and paced the expanse of the bedroom. Thanks, Mom. We've got dinner at 7 and one more night in his parents' house, but then we're heading out bright and early in the morning. I'll keep you updated and give you a call on the way home. With a glance at the time and a peek at my text messages, I dragged myself to the shower to get ready for the evening. It was currently 3 p.m. I still had no word from Marshall, and I was going a little stir-crazy in that room. By the time I'd washed up, gotten dressed, and finished my hair, I was pleasantly surprised by the sound of a knock. I was mid-lipstick application when I heard the bathroom door creak open. Marshall leaned against the doorframe, arms folded across his chest as his eyes met mine in the mirror.
I don't think I'll ever get over just how beautiful you are.
Marshall's lips tugged up into a grin before he came up behind me, wrapping me in the warmth of his embrace and kissing the top of my head.
You smell like coconuts and vanilla?
I turned around and smiled, picking a piece of lint off the front of his sweater before smoothing my hands down his chest. Fresh from the shower, with a mischievous gleam in his eye, his upper lip curled, a wicked smirk stretching across his lips as he tilted my chin and pressed his lips to mine, a whisper floating between us.
You smell good enough to eat.
Crimson coated my cheeks, a blush burning across my face like wildfire. Marshall! I looked down at my feet sheepishly. At the time, I found the comment incredibly sexy. But now, I can't help but laugh at the irony. Your parents are waiting for us downstairs.
Let them wait.
Marshall breathed, pressing another kiss to my lips before brushing a thumb against the corner of them.
Sorry about the smeared lipstick.
I swatted his hands away, turning to touch it up before marching around him and over to the bedroom door. Come on, lover boy. We've got all the time in the world to fool around later. But if we don't make it down to dinner in time, I'm pretty sure your mother's going to kill us. With a sigh, I watched as he rubbed my lipstick from his lips and sauntered over to the door.
I suppose you're right. Wouldn't want Mother Dearest to lose her marbles.
I giggled at his words, playfully punching him in the shoulder before the two of us made our way downstairs to greet his parents. His mother was clad in the most hideous sweater vest known to man, and a skirt that made nuns look like heathens. His father leaned back in a kitchen chair, still dressed in business attire, a button-down and suit jacket, the tie slightly loosened. Vivian was nowhere in sight.
Marshy! Oh!
His mother proclaimed, grabbing the boy up in her arms and giving him a tight squeeze before her eyes traveled over to me.
Daughter-in-law?
She gritted out, her tone flat as her icy blue eyes scrutinized my choice of clothing.
You look like a
mother.
Marshall was quick to intercept, breaking free from her grasp and moving back over to me, quick to wrap a comforting arm around my waist.
Why don't we go ahead and get started? Dinner smells great.
A quiet scoff left her lips as she turned to the immaculate spread gracing the expanse of the dining room table. Despite his mother being the absolute antichrist, I admit her cooking skills were unmatched. Heaping piles of mashed potatoes sat in a white porcelain bowl, a mountain of butter glistening atop it. Sweet potato casserole garnished with little white marshmallows sat beside that, steam billowing up from the dish, intermingling with the intoxicating aroma of cinnamon and brown sugar. Various pies littered the table, pecans sitting amongst them, the one I was told specifically not to bring. In fact, I'd opted not to bring a single thing, and by the looks of this food, I was almost glad I hadn't. Something told me I'd have just embarrassed myself anyways. His mother was nothing short of a cooking prodigy, because sitting there in the middle of the entire spread was the most delicious roasted turkey that I have ever laid eyes on. Thickly carved pieces of meat were laid out on a gorgeous silver platter, stuffing alongside it. Suddenly, I didn't care if she was a menace or not. The only thing I could think about was having a little bit of everything on that table.
Marshall,
Susan cut in, a sinister smirk curling at her lips as her eyes slid to mine.
I made all your favorites tonight.
I see that.
Marshall smiled, his fingers tracing comforting circles on the small of my back. I hadn't realized just how tense I was until he did that. The gesture was small, but comforting.
Where's Vivian?
Vivian is...
She paused then, contemplating her next words carefully. Once again, a chill settled over my body. Something about this whole thing didn't feel right, and I was about to find out a little too late.
Well, she's disposing of some scraps right now.
Marshall simply nodded, his hand tightening around my waist uncomfortably. I looked up at him then, an uneasy expression on his face as he eyed the dinner table. He knew something that I didn't. And for the first time during our marriage, I felt incredibly uncomfortable. But at the time, I pushed that feeling aside and pasted on a smile. I wish I'd taken off running out the front door.
Hey, I got rid of the...
Vivian stopped, her words halting on her lips when she noticed me standing in the dining room. With an awkward laugh, she scratched the back of her neck.
The bags? Mom did so much cooking that she filled up the trash can and the compactor.
For added emphasis, she added,
I've never seen so many green bean cans in all my life.
Susan's tight-lipped smile twitched, and if I hadn't caught it at just the right time, I'm sure I'd have missed it. For only a moment, her facade had slipped, and I'd witnessed that flicker of rage. Anxiety was clawing at my insides, threatening to bubble out in the form of vomit. Something was whispering to me that Vivian had almost slipped up. Whatever she had really been up to out there might have involved disposing of something. But it definitely wasn't green bean cans. My eyes flickered over to Marshall's father. But Henry was cool, calm, and collected. His jaw set and his eyes cast downward towards his phone. Susan was infuriating, sure, but Henry was unsettling in a way that words can't express. He almost seemed inhuman. I gulped, then glanced once again towards Marshall for some type of direction. When his eyes met mine, they softened slightly before pressing his hand against my lower back, guiding me towards a chair at the dinner table. Once everyone was seated, and Henry said grace, we all dug in, filling our plates to the brim. About 10 minutes into the dinner, I was halfway through my plate and two glasses deep in Cabernet before Marshall's mother spoke up. Despite her interruption, I continued to plow into my dinner, barely able to get the food into my mouth fast enough. I didn't know what seasoning she used to make everything on this plate taste like heaven, but I was on my second helping of mashed potatoes before the sound of my name broke me free from my food-induced trance.
Holly?
A loathsome grin sliding across Susan's painted lips.
How did you like the turkey? And the stuffing?
Marshall shot her a glare, shaking his head and mouthing for her to stop. Susan ignored him, though, holding me captive in that icy blue visage of hers. I actually haven't had either of those. My voice trailed off nervously as I glanced down at my plate. But the green bean casserole, the baked mac and cheese, and the...
Oh, try the turkey and the stuffing, darling.
The pet name made my stomach turn. But the last thing I wanted to do was cause a scene. Suddenly, everyone's eyes were on me, waiting for me to take a bite. An awkward smile slid across my lips as I stabbed my fork into the turkey first and shoved it into my mouth. The texture of it was admittedly strange. As I chewed, the grin on Susan's face widened. Oddly, it tasted of pork?
So?
Susan winked at her son. Marshall was fuming. I watched as his jaw clenched and his hands balled into fists.
Mother, you didn't.
Susan simply ignored her son, urging me onward. I quickly chewed the delectable meat and tried my best to choke it down. It's very interesting.
And the stuffing?
I was hesitant to try the stuffing, my eyes darting between mother and son, wondering what the heck was going on. But if trying her stupid dressing lightened the mood, then I would eat the whole pan if it meant we could cut through the uncomfortable tension building in this room.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
As soon as I brought the fork to my mouth, though, Marshall's hand reached out and grabbed my wrist, stopping the fork midair.
Holly, you don't have to...
Oh, but she does. I'd simply be offended.
Susan screeched, her brows furrowing. With an awkward laugh, I tried to ease the pressure mounting in the room by quickly shoving the fork full of food into my mouth and shooting her a smile.
I brought that meat.
Marshall hissed, eyes shooting daggers at his mother.
For your own dinners. Family dinners. This is completely inappropriate to cook for a guest, and you know it. This is not what I meant when I said I wanted you to cook my favorites. You know I've chosen a different life for myself now.
As I listened to Marshall's words, I couldn't help but wonder what the heck he was going on about. I wasn't a freaking vegan, so what was the deal? And then it happened. As I was chewing, I stumbled upon something hard and sharp.
But she is family.
Susan urged, a sharp laugh bubbling from her mouth. The silence in the room was increasingly loud as I reached into my mouth and tugged the sharp object free. When I finally glanced down at it, head cocked to the side and brows furrowed, it took me a second to realize what it was. And when I did, I nearly passed out. A nail. No, not the kind you hammer into wood, but a human nail. And even worse, it was one I was familiar with. A wretched scream broke from my lips, nearly rivaling the horrid screeching of my chair legs as I scrambled back from the table, dropping my fork in the process, and vomiting all over the marble flooring.
Holly!
The fear in his voice ricocheted off the walls. Marshall's father, stoic and cold, finally made a sound. A dark chuckle escaped his lips as he watched me have a mental breakdown. It was like this was all some sick show to them. But at the time, my mind was spiraling, the realization blooming into panic when I thought about that nail again. I knew exactly whose finger it belonged to. She had come through the morgue just before we left to go on this trip. It all made sense now. Her name was Sarah. She was 22. She died in a car accident. I normally veered away from the morgue when I knew my dad had just gotten a new corpse, but I wanted to say goodbye before I left. If there was one thing I remember about Sarah, it was the fact that her arm was almost completely ripped from her body. My dad was quick to try and shield me from the grisly scene, but there was no mistaking it. Hanging out from beneath the sheet was a badly mangled hand. And on that hand, my eye couldn't help but zero in on her blood-crusted nails, each one painted a light shade of brown, little white daisies adorning the nail of her thumb. She was due to be cremated. And Marshall, he... My lips trembled as I recalled my dad telling him to cremate the body before we left. Her parents were going to pick up the ashes this weekend. Marshall was quick to flock to my side, trying to console me, but I was both disgusted and frightened. These people were absolute monsters. They didn't have strange eating habits. That was all just a cover-up, a sorry excuse for what they really were. Cannibals. My ears were ringing, my stomach was twisting, and an overwhelming bout of dizziness washed over me as I realized what he had done. The man who held me when I cried, tears blurring my vision as I read my vows. The man who had brought me so many flowers that I'd run out of faces. The man who promised to protect and love and cherish me. That man was a sick, twisted psychopath. And I loved him. I loved him so much that I did the unspeakable. I waited. I held on to his outstretched hand and leaned into his warmth. I wiped the tears from my eyes, the vomit from my mouth, and steadied my breathing. I marched back over to the table and sat down. And I had two more glasses of wine. I instantly knew what had to be done. And I hated myself for playing fine when I very clearly wasn't. But if I didn't stick to the script, the next part would have been much harder. It was 4-1, after all. For the rest of the night, I didn't touch another bite of food. I simply sat there. Admittedly, I was biding my time. Neither his parents nor his sister said another word. All of them had smug grins, and it took everything I had not to wipe them off their faces right then and there. But if my plan unfolded as it had in my head, karma would intervene for me. That night, as I lay in bed, my back turned to Marshall. I sobbed. Marshall tried to console me, asking me over and over to please understand, and that he didn't know that his mother was going to cook what she had tonight. But I didn't want to hear a single thing from his mouth ever again. All I could focus on was the text he'd sent all those nights ago. I had been such a fool.
I have strange eating habits.
Neither of us said a word to each other the remainder of the night. Instead, I waited patiently for Marshall to fall asleep. And when he finally did, that's when my plan was set into motion. I wrenched myself from the bed, crept into the kitchen, slid an oven mitt onto my hand, and grabbed a kitchen knife from the butcher's block. It was pure adrenaline racing through me at that point as I hovered over Marshall's sleeping form. In this state, he looked completely innocent. His mouth was slightly ajar and his breathing was heavy. Thick, dark lashes fluttered closed, and messy hair was strewn about his forehead. I hated that I knew what he had done. And yet, I still loved him. Tears streamed down my face as I raised up the knife, my hands shaking from within the oven mitt, sweaty and damp. And then, in one swift motion, I slid it across his neck. Crimson poured out of him like beans in a bean bag, spilling over the tattered flesh and pooling around his head. It crept across the sheets, staining everything with the consequences of my actions. Wretched sobs broke free from my lips when his eyes flicked open, meeting mine for only a moment, confusion dancing across his expression. A strangled, gurgling sound bubbled up from his mouth as he choked. I stumbled away from him, bit back another sob, and snuck back downstairs, down the hallway and into his parents' room. His father was snoring and his mother was on her side, bright orange earplugs shoved into her ears, and a spaghetti noodle arm dangling lazily from the covers. I carefully brushed the hilt of the knife against the inside of her palm, trying my best to get whatever DNA I could onto it. If I intended to get away with framing her, I needed to do this right. She flinched once, and I held my breath, hoping that she was still asleep. When her breathing grew heavy again, I crept back upstairs and laid the knife on the bed, right next to Marshall. With a sigh of relief, I turned towards the little fireplace still blazing in the corner of the room and tossed the oven mitts into the flames, successfully cleansing myself of the crime. Then I grabbed my belongings, dashed out to the car, and barreled down the road. My chest heaved as I fought to catch my breath, the next part of my plan almost scaring me more than the last. I couldn't mess this up.
911, what's your emergency?
Yes, I need to report a missing person. The police were quick to show up to Marshall's parents' house. A wellness check, no doubt, turning into a murder investigation when they noticed the blood staining Susan's hand. But by that time, I was back in town before it all blew up. Apparently, not only had they found Marshall's body, but they found the remains of several others buried in the backyard as well, Sarah's remains included. Because of Sarah, this was all linked back to my dad and his business, and I was sure that while we were under investigation as well, the pressure of it all would cause me to crack. But once my father provided the proper surveillance camera footage that showed Marshall sneaking Sarah's body into the trunk of his father's car, it became apparent to me that Henry was never on a business trip at all. He was on a grocery run to pick up their favorite meal. The footage instantly cleared our name, and instead it incriminated his family even more. I never told my parents that I'd actually been the one to murder Marshall, and I never intend to. My explanation to them was short and simple. At this point, both of them knew the details of the murder, and once I was able to push it past my lips, the both of them nodded in silent understanding. Neither of them asked any questions. I think they just inherently knew, and my answer was enough to make them both sick to their stomachs. Thankfully, neither of them wanted to hear any of the repulsive details. I spent Thanksgiving with my in-laws. Something is seriously wrong with the food.
I hope you enjoyed Feast of Deception, as written by Haley Hinson and performed by Olivia Steele, Kevin Barbieri, Rissa Montanez, and Michelle Kane. You can find more of author Haley Hinson by visiting our website, www.creepypastastories.com, where you can find out more about her, as well as read more of her work. Olivia Steele is a voice actress who loves the spooky side of things. Her talent varies between gameplay, live stream archives, singing, and other voiceover related things. Our second tale of the evening is written by Kyle Harrison and is performed by Kevin Barbieri, Rissa Montanez, Michelle Kane, Nick Goroff, Danielle Hewitt, and Eric Peabody. In it, we meet a family confronted with unexpectedly hosting the less fortunate on the ultimate day of thanks. Now, without further ado, I present to you Unwelcomed Guests.
Are you serious?
I was helping my brother Trent with his last bit of luggage when I overheard my wife in the kitchen. Val was shouting on the phone to her mom, and that is never a good sign. She put the phone on mute and walked into the hallway to get my reaction as I started up the stairs.
Mom says we can all wear masks, but I said it's your call. What do we do?
I looked at the food. We had everything ready for a huge Thanksgiving. Two turkeys, roast beef, mashed potatoes, yams, rolls, cranberry sauce, and even some pumpkin pie for dessert. And we were expecting a house full. My brother and his wife Bridget were already here, and her sister was supposed to be arriving that evening. Plus, my mom and grandpa, not to mention the five of us that actually lived here, I knew that the house would be crowded anyway. Having her parents here was the plan, but maybe a little less squeezed wasn't a bad thing. But then again, I knew this meant a lot to all of us. Thanksgiving is just one of those few times when all of us have the chance to get together.
It'll be fine. Is it just your mom that has it?
Val confirmed it was, and I insisted that we keep everything on schedule. Just then, our youngest, Gus, ran in with his new toy, nearly knocking something ajar, and Val told her mom the news and got off the phone to reprimand him.
Gus, remember the rules. No one is in the kitchen except cooks right now.
She shooed him away.
Aw, Mom! It smells so good!
As he did, behind my wife, I heard the baby monitor go off, and she hurried to check on our little 3-month-old Hugh. When she got back, having nursed and put him down for a nap, my phone buzzed, and I checked our Ring doorbell app to see my mom was arriving already.
Can you watch the oven? I have to help her get her stuff in.
The past week, even though I've been off work, has been hectic to say the least. Val says I seem to do better under pressure, and maybe the end result of this elaborate dinner will prove her point. Honestly, all I wanted to do this year was make sure my mom wasn't alone. It's been a little over a year since my dad walked out on her, and she hasn't exactly had a great one, to be honest. When I greeted her at the door, I saw she was wearing her typical headscarf to hide the scars from cancer treatment, and I thought to myself, I just want to see her smile and enjoy this without having to lift a finger. Who cares if it's a little chaotic, if we all get to benefit from it? But maybe I should have listened to that nagging feeling in the back of my head that told me when things get this crazy, something is bound to go wrong. Murphy's Law. I told myself it couldn't possibly be too crazy, but I think that the universe was listening and said, "Oh yeah? Watch this."
Ronnie, be careful with that bag. I have a few gifts for Gus and Sophia.
My mom returned to grab her crockpot. Mom, I told you we didn't want anything until Christmas, I reminded her as I saw it was beginning to rain. Down the street, I saw there were a few kids running inside to avoid the storm, and a few others opting to play in it.
And I told you I think I'll be going on a cruise, remember? What's the harm in giving them something now?
She chided me as she carried her stew inside. As usual, she was keeping herself busy. That was how she coped, and I guess that is what I learned best from her. Once inside and settled, I focused on asking Trent to help me move the dining table from our basement, the big one that had the extensions that could slide in. And outside, the rain got worse to the point I was thinking that we might lose power. With the table in place, I settled down for a break to watch Gus and Sophia playing Mario Kart, letting my son get in my lap. The lights flickered a bit.
Damn, it's really coming down outside, huh?
Trent cracked open a beer. I gave him an ugly look, reminding him the kids were present, as I saw Val look out toward the street worriedly. She was torn between checking for her sister and going upstairs to be with baby Hugh.
Do you think Ava is all right? I know her flight should have landed by now, but I haven't heard a thing.
She checked her phone again. With this weather, she might have got laid over. Or she's stuck in baggage claim. My mom squeezed her arm to comfort her.
I'm sure she'll be fine. Everything will be all right, okay?
Just then, somewhere at the end of the street, all of us heard what sounded like a car crash. Instinctively, Val pulled the blinds up to see if she could see anything. I could see some flashing lights and heard some car alarms, but other than that, the storm was too intense and it was too dark.
Did you guys hear that? Do you think we should call 911?
Bridget asked as she came downstairs with a hair straightener still wrapped around her bangs. I told Gus to hop up and went out to the front porch to see if I could spot anything. But I didn't see any signs of life, just the car alarm going off and the blinking lights.
It's probably nothing. I'm sure someone down the block's already contacted the police,
Trent said. I was inclined to agree. I thought maybe I could see a few figures in the rain wearing slick yellow coats, but all of them were just standing nearby and looking at the wreck, unconcerned.
Come on, bro. Let's go in and show these munchkins how to really play a battle royale.
I stood there for a moment longer, staring at the four figures in the raincoats, and wondering why they were out in the storm. I got a bad vibe and then shook it away, locking the door back and checking weather reports.
I hope they're okay, whoever they are.
Bridget peeked out the door. A few moments later, the noises stopped and we focused on the TV. Then, just as we got to the second course of a balloon fight with the kids, there was a knock on the door. Bridget was the closest, so she answered it without hesitation, but I could tell from her vocal response that the person on the other side was not an expected visitor. I turned from what I was doing to see that there was a young girl standing on the porch, shaking and shivering from the rain and cold. Bridget bent over to ask her if she needed help, and the little girl nodded and pointed toward the car we saw at the end of the street.
Our car! I think it's hurt real bad.
To the side of her was a pregnant woman in a raincoat that gave an apologetic smile. The little girl sneezed uncontrollably from the drafty storm.
Oh my goodness,
I heard my mom say as she saw the poor child.
You two, come inside. You boys go help them.
Trent must have known she was talking about him because he was already grabbing a raincoat and boots. Bridget let the little girl inside at the exact same moment that my brother and I were racing down the street to see what had happened. As we ran in the rain, I looked around for the figures I had seen in raincoats just a moment ago and couldn't help but to notice they had seemingly vanished. As we got closer to the stalled vehicle, I then noticed one of the raincoats was laying down in the street, as if discarded by its wearer. Was it the same size as the little girl now in our house? We approached the car to see if anyone was inside, but it looked deserted. Trent popped the trunk and told me to check and see if there was a tire jack. Hopefully, all they needed was to change it and be on their way. I opened the trunk, frustrated to see there were no tools inside. As I turned to tell him the bad news, I saw the figure in the yellow raincoat slam a wrench against my face. The last thing I felt was pure pain as I was knocked down on the cold, wet street. I don't know how long I was unconscious on the street, but it was still raining when I felt my senses return. The world was spinning, and my head was throbbing from the blow I had been given. My hands carefully pushed at the drenched road as I opened my eyes, trying to figure out what had just happened. I called out to Trent, looking down the road toward my house. The lights were still on. I could barely see them glistening amid the raindrops. Then I recalled the figures that had attacked me, my heart pounding as I realized they might be heading toward my house. As my body ached and I pulled myself up on the trunk of the car, I saw a familiar figure slumped against the side of the stalled vehicle in the passenger's door. Trent. I got up on my feet and stumbled a few feet toward him, horrified to discover that he had been attacked more severely than me. The assailant had used the car door to slam against Trent at least a dozen times when he had been leaning in to get a good look around. As a result, all of the seat was drenched in his blood. I tried to check and make sure that he was still alive, but adrenaline was kicking in and I was so focused on helping my family, I couldn't focus. The surge of terror and anxiety pushed me into a sprint down the road to my house. And when I saw the door ajar, my heart sank and panic settled into my bones. The attackers had made it inside. Right at the doorway, I saw a trail of blood leading to Bridget's cold body. She had tried and failed to stop the invaders, and they had slammed her against the wall and used a broken sliver of glass from a picture frame to slit her throat. I felt cold and numb to the horror as I stumbled into the house, my ears picking up the faint sound of gentle music on the record player, as I came into the foyer and saw the nightmare that had unfolded. My wife was on the left side of the table, with a large man standing behind her holding a sharp knife to her back. And on the other side was my mom, holding the kids, as they watched terrified while the little girl we had offered shelter to ran around the table excitedly. The pregnant woman sat smiling close to the head of the table, humming as she waited for the leader of the group to set the table. He was an older man with a graying beard and a baseball cap on, which reminded me a little of the star of Duck Dynasty. As I entered, the man smiled as though expecting me and put the mashed potatoes down in the center of the dining table.
Ronnie, your wife insisted we couldn't eat without you. She made quite a fuss,
he said in a calm, eloquent voice, as if nothing about them invading our house and holding us hostage was abnormal. I saw Val hold back tears as I walked toward the table, assessing the nightmare. My family was at the mercy of these attackers, but why were they acting as if they were part of our celebration? What do you want? Money? Food? Take it and go, I said, looking toward the children. You've already hurt us enough.
We came for dinner. It's a family tradition,
the man said as the oven behind him dinged and his face brightened immediately.
At last! Turkey is ready. I guess it's a good thing we waited.
The pregnant woman hummed softly and got it out of the oven as I tried again to make sense of this madness. You came to us for help. Why are you doing this? I asked, my voice cracking as the woman placed the turkey near the center of the table.
Father, I think that brother has the carving knife.
The man holding my wife at knife point gave the sharp blade to their leader. The father placed the two knives together, eager to cut the turkey, but then paused at the last moment. His blue eyes focused on me.
Maybe you should do the honors, Ronnie.
He flipped the knife around to where the handle was made pointing toward me. The tension in the room was palpable as I moved closer, right next to my mom. This was my chance to attack back, I thought, as I saw my wife give me a look, begging me to do something. I slowly reached for the blade handle, gripping it, and then very softly pulling it toward myself. At the last second, I plunged it toward the father, pulling him along with the blades and watching as it sunk into his right shoulder. As soon as it happened, my mom shouted for the children to run and hide while the other man reached toward me to try and knock me down. I swung around with a dinner plate and smashed it into his face, trying to gain the upper hand, as my wife and mom ran toward the front hallway. Before they could get very far, the pregnant woman stood in their way and shoved chairs in their path.
This is very indecent behavior for the dinner table.
The other man pulled my hair back and hit me against the stove as I saw the father pull the bloody knife out of his shoulder angrily.
You're going to regret that one, Ronnie. Very inappropriate behavior for this gathering.
He stood near the table and began to breathe heavily. At the same time, I heard the little girl wrestle Sophia to the ground, my own daughter screaming as she tried to make it to a hiding spot.
Take them to the living room.
The father ordered the other man, wiping blood from the open wound and placing the carving knife back in the block of wood beside the oven.
Family squabbles are common, Ronnie. But really, think of the example you're setting for your children.
The mother chided us as Gus and Sophia were forced to sit center stage in front of the TV.
You have it so perfect. Everything you ever wanted. Right here. Some of us had to fight hard to even get scraps.
She tugged at my daughter's hair.
Leave her alone! Don't you see you're hurting her?
Mom tried to reach her. The other man shoved her into a chair, waiting for the leader to give the word.
Brother, calm down. There's no need for violence. This is supposed to be a special occasion.
The father reached for the remote and switched on a football game.
Let's not forget family is what brought us together.
The others of this strange group repeated his words like a mantra and used my children as a footstool to watch his game. My blood boiled, and I found myself thinking of something else to do to take back control. What's a good game without a cold beer? I sat next to him.
A fine idea, Ronnie. Mother, can you fetch us one?
She stood up, holding her swollen belly as she went to the kitchen.
Val, why don't you help her out? I was hoping she could read between the lines. She nodded, frightened but obedient, as she followed the mother into the next room.
You're quite hospitable. I knew this was the right house to go to.
Val returned with the beverages. She offered me the one on the right. Just as I was watching for this madman to sip the drink and be distracted, a noise from the kitchen caught everyone's attention. The baby monitor. The mother froze and turned to the leader with a look of sheer delight on her face.
Oh, you think it could really be? A new addition to the family?
My face went pale as I saw the man nod. And in that instant, Val lost her senses and attacked the pregnant woman as she was preparing to climb the stairs.
You won't hurt my baby!
The pregnant woman screamed back and fell forward as Val grabbed the hems of her dress, tugging and ripping at the material. As the two women tussled, it exposed the swollen belly of the mother, and I saw that there was no obvious baby bump. Instead, it was a bruised tumor, overgrown and clearly poisoning the woman's body. She had used this false pregnancy to get her way in here, to steal our child for her own. The mother kicked Val down the stairs, knocking her unconscious against the wall, and then scrambled toward the nursery. I tried to make a move toward my wife, but the strong brother stood in the way, his strange silence an ever-present threat as I heard the storm grow louder outside. I listened, frantic and desperate, as Hugh cried repeatedly over the monitor and then became silent. Moments later, I saw the mother standing at the top of the stairs cradling my baby boy.
Oh, Father, he is beautiful. Oh.
The little girl, distracted by this little infant, ran between Gus and Sophia, giving them a chance to break free and run toward the next room. I motioned for my mom to go toward them, as I realized the invaders were distracted by our newborn, and I could use that to my advantage.
I want to see! Am I getting a little brother?
The father looked at Hugh, intrigued as if he had discovered a new species, and he was sizing him up. I was slowly approaching the fire poker next to the fireplace. Then, the doorbell chimed and my heart skipped a beat. Ava.
More guests? We will need to make room at the table.
Father said instinctively, passing Hugh to me. It was like he was on autopilot. I took my baby and gave it to my mom, motioning her to stay in the next room with my other children. Don't come back out, no matter what you hear. Behind me, I heard Ava make a yelp and I grabbed for the fire poker. Then I saw the brother was holding my sister-in-law by the neck, her feet dangling above the ground. Her frantic eyes twitched as the father reached for the carving knives.
Give us a child back, or we can carry out the family reunion on this one instead.
I held my ground, protecting my family, and waved the poker toward the group, taking their little girl into my arms. Two can play this. Leave now, and no harm comes to her, I warned. I was desperate to save Ava, to save all of us. Reluctantly, the father motioned for the other man to lower Ava. Once she was on the ground, she crawled over to me. I whispered in her ear to call the police as the father's eyes focused on the little girl.
You don't have it in you to hurt a family.
I looked at the little girl and released her, realizing that he was right. I couldn't be a monster like them, but now defenseless, I had to think fast. Police are on their way. Leave, or you'll never get out of here alive. Outside, the thunderstorm bellowed and got worse.
Mother, take our child to the car. Brother and I are going to give Ronnie a parting gift,
the father instructed. The two women stepped out to the front porch obediently, and brother and father went to the kitchen table. Once we were alone, the two immediately overturned the table, scattering the food everywhere. Then, taking the carving knife, they rushed at me. I tried to move fast to get away and use the poker as a defense, but the two of them were too strong. They pinned me down, and the father began to pry my mouth open.
I think you'll be a fine example to your flock, Ronnie. Learn your place like a good sheep.
He snarled as he pushed the knife toward my tongue. Behind him, I saw the brother smiled wickedly and showing his own mouth, revealing that long ago, their weird leader had sliced off his tongue and was about to do the same to me. The blade began to cut as I struggled and screamed.
Behind the two men, I heard Val and Ava match my tone, and they came charging in, using frying pans and sewing utensils as weapons to drive them off. The group tussled for a moment, and then they heard approaching police sirens. This time, the duo actually ran out toward the streets. Gasping for air, I was helped to my feet by my wife and hugged her intensely, trying to not cry from the bizarre invasion. Half an hour later, we all filed a report and found ourselves broken and exhausted amid a house of carnage. I did my best to keep my children calm as we sketched out what the attackers looked like, and then watched as Bridget and Trent were taken away in body bags. I didn't let the tears flow until Mom held me and I realized how close we came to being next. The invaders had made it out of the neighborhood without a trace, leaving behind only the nightmare of what they had done. We let Gus and Sophia sleep near us, and Hugh stayed in the bed as we all tried our best to shake off the awful trauma we had been through. The next day on the news, I saw we hadn't been alone. Reports came in from other local neighbors that the family of attackers had gone to several other homes and taken the lives of seven others. When asked why they had done it, many had speculations and a few guesses. All of the attackers were searching for some kind of family to be a part of. I can't say for sure they will be caught or will strike again. I can't ever feel safe again, even in my own home. But I will try to heal and take solace in the family I have and remember what could have been, what I could have lost. I must take refuge in that, despite what we have been through, and focus on rebuilding it. Otherwise, the nightmares win, even if they never return.
I hope you enjoyed Unwelcomed Guests, as written by Kyle Harrison and performed by Kevin Barbieri, Rissa Montanez, Michelle Kane, Nick Goroff, Danielle Hewitt, and Eric Peabody. You can find more of author Kyle Harrison by visiting our website, www.creepypastastories.com, where you can find out more about him, as well as read more of his work. You can also hear more of Rissa, Danielle, and Michelle over on the Creepy Podcast at www.creepypod.com. On to the shows. Longtime resident and powerhouse, Otis Jiry has his very own show here on our network, Scary Stories Told in the Dark, which you can hear every Sunday night. Eric Peabody's Horror Hill, a podcast dedicated to some of our deeper and darker tales. We hope you check him out. And Drew Blood's Dark Tales airs Fridays, featuring some Southern down-home horror. Now, our weekly descent into the depths has just about come to a close. But before we go, I'd like to take a moment to thank you for joining us for tonight and remind you to take a moment to stop by our iTunes page and leave Chilling Tales for Dark Nights a 5-star review and a kind word. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, if you haven't already. And of course, subscribe to us on YouTube, where you can find an archive of our work going back to 2012. And consider signing up as a patron at our website, chillingtalesfordarknights.com, to show your support and get all of our content ad-free. I'm your host of the evening, Steve Taylor, and it's been a pleasure. Tune in again next week when we once again turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Sweet dreams, listener. Sweet dreams.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dix.com/scorecardplus for details.